top of the morning to you. I'm recording this on St. Patrick's Day. Before I continue my first ever journey through the Harry Potter series, just a few quick announcements. First, I just wanted to reach out in support of anyone that was affected by the Christchurch shootings in New Zealand that happened recently. Racism, xenophobia, Islamophobia are all horrible, horrible things, and I hate that this sort of thing keeps happening and that 49 people lost their lives because someone had terrible views. I'm glad that these Harry Potter books inherently try to teach people to not be like that, and I hope that we can all strive to remove these horrible things from the world and just make the world a better place. So my heart goes out to everyone affected, and for April's Charity of the Month, we'll do something relevant to help those victims. Speaking of things in the news, I know that the whole Johnny Depp stuff came out. I touch on it later on in the episode, so you can listen to it there for my thoughts on what has been released. The previous two things I've talked about suck. You know what doesn't suck? Our new patrons! So shout out to Jordan O'Meara, Megan Cope, The One and Online, Jamie Lee Maracle, Emma Cooey, The Return of Ali Ravik, Jasmine Ellis, Colin Yoy, Pavi Kukkonen, Mandy Marie, Abby Elmer, Trader Hose, Callie Martin, Charlotte Knott, Jessica Liddell, Danielle Athanasiu, Christine Kanan, and Jonathan Roger. Shout out to Marianne Hardman and Al Vega, who upgraded their pledge. A big shout out to the return of two previous producer-level patrons who are back on the team, Harlan Haskins and Akanksha Saxena, and to our new producer-level patrons, Wouter Vandermaiden, Shelby Darnell, and Noelia. They join the ranks of Leanne, Vicky, Aaron, Erica, Calvin, Jesse, Natalie, Deborah, Clough, Frank, Marchismo, Tori, Samantha, Juan, Kieran, Rebecca, Abid, Caitlin, Rose, Marie, Jill, Marie, Lisa, Ariel, Romina, Camille, Russell, Dustin, Audra, Eleanor, Sydney, Billy, Rossanne, Andrea, Nikita, Lala, Chelsea, Taylor, Lovekesh, Ali, Cassandra, Roxy, Amelia, Sean, Sarah, Ben, Rachel, Zachary, Jessica, Arna, Tiago, Daisy, Jessica, Orchid, Steve, Vivian, Takari, Haley, Marino, Moster, Pinky, Angelina, Russ, Marie, Phineas, Lee, Alex, Brian, Caitlin, Finn, Mosin, Grace, Sammy, Rule, Ingen, Mari, Brianne, Heidi, Alexandra, John, Jen, Noel, Tao, Emily, Michael, Robin, Patricia, Will, Liz, Mariah, Braden, Sarah, Claire, Teal, Sina, Rory, Gloria, Sarah, Patrick, Alicat, Hallie, Veronica, Kevin, Lotta, Noah, Tracy, Lucinda, Carlos, Pam, Nikki, Colleen, Jennifer, Friday, Ivor, Naomi, Tyler, Summer, Heather, Vera, Carrie, Andrea, Topher, Ella, Anthony, Weekend at Dead Cat Ladies, David, Elisa, Lynn, Emily, Ryan, Cameron, Justin, Christine, Jacob, Toothless, Maya, Addie, Mark, Polly, Kimberly, Sanjin, Brittany, Nita, Bavi, Tumnus, Remy, Matt, Sarah, Lauren, Nona, Kyle, Zena, Emily, Colleen, and Can't I Potter? Who never turn the faucet to hot when they mean to turn it to cold or vice versa. If you want to be like one of these amazing patrons and get access to bonus episodes, director's commentary, exclusive merchandise, you can head on over to patreon.com/potterless. But without further ado, let's get into episode 69, nice, of Potterless, covering chapter 18 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, guest starring Cecilia Lynn Jacobs. Hello, Internet, and welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a grown man reading the Harry Potter series for the very first time. My name is Mike Schubert. I am that grown man, and I am joined by someone that you may have heard on audio drama such as Wolf Through 59. It's Cecilia Lynn Jacobs. Cecilia, how's it going?
I'm pretty good.
Pretty good?
Yeah, really good. No, okay. I've had a good day.
Good, that's good. Well, let's make it better by talking about angsty teenagers.
Oh, my favorite.
Aren't they all of our face. So we're going to be discussing chapters 18 and 19 of book 7. And chapter 18 is called The Life and Lies of Albus Dumbledore. So let's get right into it. As you may have recalled in chapter 17, Harry did some dumb shit and decided to follow Bathilda Bagshot, thinking that'll be a good idea.
What a loser.
So it's the next day, the sun is coming up, and Harry can't appreciate being alive because he's still freaking out about losing his wand and it being broken in half.
To be fair, that I think of all of the things that Harry Potter freaks out about in the first half of the seventh book, him breaking his wand is probably like the most...
That's pretty legitimate.
That's the one that gets to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of like shitty shit happens in the seventh book in general, mm-hmm. but like the one that really, really gets to me is like, oh, the wand. And he like... kind of doubts himself as a wizard generally and like held his talisman up as his like little wand, and now he's got to stand on his own. Also at the same time that he finds out that Dumbledore like had a thingy with mm-hmm. Grindelwald. Ah, hooray for metaphors. Like, it's the, just... man.
The other rough thing about the wand is that he, and Harry brings this up, is that his wand had like the magical thing that saved him from Voldemort, and he had no idea what all of that was. So at least in his brain, he's like, oh no, like this is the one thing that saved my ass. What do I do now?
Yeah, this unexplainable, like giant magical thing that is more powerful than me, it like has always been there to swoop out of the sky and save me.
Mm-hmm. Now what?
Crap. Wow, it's like it's a coming of age tale.
Yeah. So he's
free. He must learn to stand on his own.
Oh, geez. Don't we all? So he feels weak, and he knows that Hermione would tell him that the wand is only as good as the wizard, but he doesn't buy it because of the whole golden flame spark thing from before. He dreads the loss of the twin cores, but honestly, in my brain, since Voldemort is looking for a new wand anyway, it seems like this doesn't matter. Because it seems like Voldemort has been pressing who we now will learn is Grindelwald to trying to get this other wand or some other wand than the one that he's been fighting Harry with before. Mm-hmm. So the double core thing doesn't even really matter, right?
I mean, while Voldemort is trying to find a new wand, he hasn't
yet
really found one yet. Mm-hmm. So like, yes, it still does matter to a certain extent. And also, it seems like Harry is like super unclear on like stuff that I have felt way more clear about reading this book, and that he's like, oh my goodness, like it's definitely like my wand specifically and not the fact that Voldemort and I have this weird connection.
Yeah, true.
And
this whole scar
have.
Thing.
Like, it's not, it has nothing to do with that. And I think that has been talked about before. Yes. That, that like that wand chose him because they,
like the wand could have chose him because of the scar connection.
Because of his connection with Voldemort, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that is not just like, oh, you randomly got one.
True.
It's
okay.
Like a brother wand, right?
Yeah.
So I think it is really legit that he's scared. And I also think that one of the things that I really like about these books is that J.K. Rowling is pretty good at taking like really common, complex human emotions and making them really kind of packageable and digestible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are downsides to that, but I also think that like when you're scared and running from a bunch of dark wizards
and big Satan boy,
big Satan boy, and also your mentor, father, grandfather person told you that you're like wizard Jesus and then died, like, I don't know. You kind of grasp at straws, maybe.
Sure.
Like,
yeah. Totally. Like, also, he's a teenager. And like, if I was going through any of this as a teenager, I'd be freaking the fuck out constantly.
Much. Yeah. Like, there's like only so much you can do. So I don't know. I am on Harry's side for this one. Yeah.
Cool.
That's what we have so far.
So Harry pulls the snitch out of his Hagrid pelt necklace thing, and it makes Harry furious at Dumbledore. And he is mad at Dumbledore because he feels, quote, left to grope in the darkness, which we've ever listened to a past episode of Potterless. I hate that J.K. Rowling loves the word grope so much. I've been reassured by many British listeners that in the UK, grope is a normal word for like feeling around. But at least here, I've never heard it in a normal context.
Really? It's a normal word here, too.
Okay, this is good because maybe I'm just a stupid person, but I feel like I've only ever heard it in like a,
Yeah, because like since the 90s, it's been used in the context of law. Mm-hmm. But like many of the words that are like creepy and sexy now. Mm-hmm.
Were normal before.
Were like totally normal words that had to do with like passing somebody the salt.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember.
Or like feeling around in the dark for someone.
Sure.
Or like something.
Like, yeah. Like the way J.K. Rowling uses it in the book.
Yeah. So like, of course, like if there's a word that means feeling around in the dark for something, you're going to apply it to some body parts eventually.
Yeah. I remember in middle school that happened with the word queer. And I don't know if I was just blind to it, but I feel like I knew of it as a synonym just for like strange.
Yeah.
And then it became more and more for like LGBT.
Yes.
And then I felt weird using the word queer as a synonym for strange because I'm like, these people aren't strange, but I don't know. I feel like that was one that I saw happen in real time where earlier in my life, it was just a synonym. And I was like, oh, this word means a specific thing.
Mm-hmm. Or like weird, it used to be used to describe basically anything having to do with magic.
Mm-hmm.
Or like that's a version that it has, right? Like the weird sisters.
Mm. True. Harry Potter, good reference. So grope around in the darkness. Harry's very upset. And Harry's also upset about dropping the photo of the thief because now Voldemort has all of the info. Hermione is up and brings Harry Potter some tea because she's perfect. And she says that she has the Rita Skeeter book. She's keeping everything together. So she has the Rita Skeeter book so that they can figure out who the thief is. There's a note to Bathilda in the book from Rita Skeeter. Fun fact about the audiobooks, Stephen Fry pronounces Bathilda Batilda. And is that the real pronunciation or is that a British thing? I keep thinking it was Bathilda.
Well, Jim Dale also pronounces it as
Batilda.
Batilda.
Okay.
I always have read it to rhyme with Matilda, which is also spelled with an H.
Oh, Matilda's with an H? Okay. Mm-hmm. Then it probably is Batilda.
Yeah, I think it's just like one of those things.
Okay. Then I retroactively apologize for mispronouncing your name in a bunch of episodes of Potterless.
So it goes.
So the note from Rita to Batilda ends with, "You said everything, even if you don't remember it," which is super terrifying and sounds incredibly shady and definitely means she used some sort of thing, whether it was Veritaserum or not, that she shouldn't be able to as a journalist.
Oh, Rita Skeeter is like the shadiest, like one of the very shadiest characters.
Yes.
Like all of the adults in this book series, except for like Dumbledore and the Order of the Phoenix, are just like really morally suspect.
Yeah, but, super true.
Yeah.
So Harry,
life lessons, guys. Children.
Harry then has savage pleasure of learning all of the things that Dumbledore, quote, didn't think were worth telling him. I'm doing the largest air quotes possible for all you listening at home. Hermione asks if Harry is still mad at her, and she is crying. She's very upset about the whole situation. Harry says no. He knows that her breaking his wand was an accident, and he admits that he would be dead without her, which is very true. Not just in this one instance, but like multiple times throughout this whole camping escapade.
You know, I feel that it's a mark of Harry's maturity that he's finally able to A, recognize and B, vocalize the fact that Hermione just constantly saves his ass.
Always holding it together.
Just, you know, yay, Harry.
You did it.
Baby
Seven
claps.
Books later, you
yep,
did
look
it.
At you, bud. Hermione's super sad.
Mm-hmm. Harry tears through the book and finds the photo in question with Dumbledore and the thief. Narrator Harry again calls him handsome, which this is something I've brought up recently, but I find it a bit uncomfortable that J.K. Rowling has this thing where, oh, if you're good at magic, you're hot. I think it's kind of strange. But then also, right?
Yeah.
Everybody who's good at magic is hot. And eventually Except Voldemort becomes Moody. Ugly. Right. But he's only ugly because of scars and stuff, not like naturally. It's only because he lost an eye and got scars.
Yeah. No. He's described as strange looking because he's gotten a bunch of chunks torn out of him.
Yeah. I'm sure in J.K. Rowling's mind, he was super hot beforehand. It's kind of strange.
Yeah. No, it's strange.
The other thing, which is less strange and more interesting, I feel like Harry has to be bisexual. I don't know if this is just a not necessarily sexual interest towards men, but the only people that he really calls attractive, aside from Fleur, who is described as just like objectively the prettiest girl ever, aside from that, Harry calls so many dudes hot. He calls Sirius hot. He calls young Tom Riddle hot. He calls this who we learn is Grindelwald hot. He calls Cedric. I feel like there's a bunch of dudes. I don't know if he even says Draco, but that's in play. I feel like there's more often than not we hear about Harry thinking that dudes are attractive and not women. Obviously, you get Cho and Ginny, but I find it kind of interesting, and I don't know if this is ever touched upon. I feel like I've heard the fan theories about it. I just think it's a recurring theme, at least in the past two books, where Harry keeps calling dudes attractive repeatedly.
Can we get a little like dry and technical for a second and talk about narrator in Harry Potter?
I'm very confused by narrator Harry.
Yes. So, like, this is an interesting narrator, right? Because this, or like, I don't know, it's kind of a typical narrator, right? It's like third person limited omniscience.
I think that is the technical term. Like, it knows everything that Harry knows, but it's not necessarily just Harry.
Plus, but it like jumps around. It like is limited to the perspective of characters. In the book most of the time, except in the first book.
Right.
You know,
right off the bat when it knows everybody's name.
How very wrong he was. So, like, except in the first book, and
there's a few chapters that aren't centered around Harry where it's not Harry.
Yeah, so, like, one could argue that that is where this recurrence of, like, descriptor dudes is bangingly sexy and all of the... like all of the ladies are like, and she's there.
The other thing that
she's got a crush on so and so. It comes from, but like, I don't, you know, like, I don't really know what to do about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's one of the weird points in this thing.
It's also not necessarily, it doesn't have to mean that he's bisexual, because like, I'm a straight man and I'm not attracted to dudes, but I still can tell like, oh, Brad Pitt is an attractive dude, or like, this dude's kind of weird looking, like without wanting any sort of relationship or to make out with them or whatever.
Snape is not hot, but he's very good at magic.
Yeah.
Same they never. With Remus Lupin.
Yeah. I don't know if they ever say Remus is hot. They really only say Snape has oily hair and a big nose. But no, but you're right.
Skinny, pallid legs in book five.
Dirty underwear in the flashback.
Graying, skinny pallid legs and graying underpants in book five, hook nose. Just general, like anytime they describe his facial expression, mostly generalized comparisons to bats are like not considered hot in like contemporary Western culture.
Totally. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, it's not direct. Mm-hmm. It's not nearly as direct as like Sirius. Wow. Just like basically
how like, it always
is. There's just like a tiny imaginary asterisk every time Sirius Black's name's mentioned. It's just like Sirius Black, asterisk, the most banging wizard ever.
It's very true. I went to the Harry Potter thing at the Natural History. It's like
the Historical Society.
Yes. Yeah. I went to that museum exhibit here in New York, and it was really cool. And they had a bunch of paintings that were finally not just like based off of the movie actors and actresses, which was really nice. Man. You got a Hagrid that looked different and a McGonagall that looked different. It wasn't Maggie Smith, which I think she's still perfect casting, but it was nice to see like other artists' renditions. And the Snape they had was actually perfect, because Alan Rickman is a good looking dude. Even though they try to like ugly him up a little, you're still like, eh. He's not gross.
It's Alan Rickman.
It's Potter. But they had a painting of Snape, and he looked gross. Like, his hair looked really thin and oily, and like he hadn't taken a shower in forever. And I was like, this is Snape. This is him. I like this so much. I don't like seeing Alan Rickman, and I always just see that gif where he's like going back against the window. I'm like, ugh. Whereas this one in the painting was much more accurate.
You know, I think it's going to forever bother me that they started making the Harry Potter movies before she finished publishing the books.
That is a problem.
It is. And I get really, like, intense about this, because I was really intense about this as a 10-year-old when when Warner Brothers, you know, when this
happened. When it all came out.
When it happened, right? And we were like, we're still waiting for this other book to come out. Like,
don't worry about a movie. Write the book.
Yeah, but I think that, like, it feels especially present in the later books when characters start blending, or, like, when the illustrations in various editions start reflecting
movie people.
Yeah. Or, like, I don't know, I was listening to an earlier episode and you were talking, you had, like, a very, I think that, I hear there's been some talk about wearing normal clothes under robes.
There's a huge debate.
Yeah, but from my recollection in the U.S. editions, the first illustrations don't show the kids wearing clothes under robes.
There, I think some do and some don't.
Okay.
The main thing that's always the big question with the clothes under the robes argument is that the illustrations in the books were never approved by J.K. Rowling. It was just someone else did them.
Interesting.
Because one of the things she points out is that Harry's scar in the book illustrations is in the middle.
The center,
and she thinks it's off to the side.
Yeah.
So you can't necessarily take it for credit. If I ever get an interview with J.K. Rowling, it'll be all stupid questions, and one of them will be, do the kids wear clothes under the robes? And I feel like she would say yes, because in the movies they end up doing it, and I feel like they probably asked her about it, but I don't know. They never say it explicitly in this. It's a very fun debate.
It is. Okay, cool.
So let's see. I don't know where
Grindelwald.
Grindelwald, right? Because he's so hot. So Harry reads the caption.
I know
we drifted a little. So Harry reads the caption, which says his friend Gellert Grindelwald, and ooh baby, let's go. So I unfortunately knew this because of seeing the first Fantastic Beasts movie. I kind of wish I didn't know this. Not very major spoiler. It would have been fun, but when I at least heard about these movies coming out, even before I started the podcast, there was talk of like, oh, Grindelwald's someone that Dumbledore knew, blah, blah, blah. So there's like no escaping it.
Okay, cool.
But it's a little sad that it didn't get to be this big plot twist, which I'm sure for normal people reading this was like, whoa, Dumbledore is have some friendship or more with this big old evil dude. So that's an interesting thing. And Harry and Hermione are very shook by it. Harry then starts to skim through the book for anything Grindelwald, and he finds a chapter called The Greater Good, which sounds like a good chapter title at first, but then we learn is super creepy and not good at all. So the book says that Dumbledore had just graduated and was head boy prefect, won an award for best spell casting, and here's my concern, how has Hermione never talked about this award before?
Right.
How has she never discussed this?
That's an excellent point.
Right?
The Barnabas Finkley Prize.
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know. Maybe it was just a one-time thing. I don't know if Barnabas Finkley was an old professor and he only gave it out when he was at the school. But this seems ridiculous that Hermione Granger has never brought this up.
Yeah. So this is so weird, right? Like, this mentions like a whole bunch of like extracurricular stuff that never comes up.
And it seems like so many things that either Hermione or other people like Percy would be totally interested in.
So, well, this is one of the things about Hermione, right? Is that like, since she is muggle-born, hardcore muggle-born, grew up in a muggle family, there are things that she might not know.
Yeah.
You know, like, this becomes like a privileged discussion in a really interesting way, right?
She does read Hogwarts History through and through a lot, but there is a chance it's not in the book.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, like, you know, like, this is the, it just, like, occurs as a possibility that, like, there are things that Hermione cannot learn, and this does come up in the books, right? Especially in the earlier books where, like, there are things that Hermione cannot learn about the wizarding world by reading, and usually when they come up, she gets really upset.
Yeah.
Which is legitimate.
Totally.
Because there is, like,
it's just not fair.
Yeah, it's A, not fair, and there's, like, it seems like in on some of these things, there's, like, bizarrely little social room for error. Someone will make fun of her for not knowing, or, like, someone will make fun of Harry for not knowing.
Sure.
Despite the fact that we're like, thank you for letting us get that thing explained to us.
Yes, but, like, very important.
Yes. I don't know. I don't know what that, like, I don't know where these things are coming from.
And
this is weird.
So it goes on. He's also the British student liaison to the Wizengamot, and he won a gold medal for alchemy work in Cairo. Which I want a spin-off book about that. That sounds real good.
The International Alchemical Conference?
Yeah.
In Cairo.
Cairo.
Yes.
I want to hear all about that.
I know, right?
So we
Somebody should have asked Percy from when the Weasleys went to Egypt.
That'd be good. Ooh, a spin-off book about the Weasleys' trip to Egypt.
That would be so silly.
Mainly starring Charlie, so we can finally learn things about Charlie Weasley.
Charlie Weasley. What a babe.
He's perfect. We need more about him.
Bill's kind of a babe too, but he's a little bit too serious. I like Charlie.
That's good. Good. Yeah. You have a good home in Potterless. Everyone's most people's favorite character, if not Weasley, if not character, is Charlie. So Dumbledore was about to go on his trip with Doge, but an owl came with the news of his mother's death. Rita only calls Doge Dog Breath Doge in the entire book, which is so Donald Trump that it scares me. Like, that's the most Donald Trump thing, to come up with a stupid nickname for someone and then continually use it in writing as if it's a normal thing to do, is just to refer to someone as an insult.
Oh, I know.
It's super scary and very parallel to the fun stuff we got going on.
Well, this is like, you know, there are like many parallels we can draw between Rita Skeeter and Donald Trump, like down to the hair.
Oh, yes.
No, it's absolutely bizarre. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's. Pass, Mike. Take it easy for a second. You might pull a muscle. Why don't you go stretch or something? Because it's time for Wingardium Adridosa. Today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Shaker and Spoon. In the Harry Potter universe, they talk a lot about fire whiskey. Butterbeer has a little bit of alcohol in it. And they talk about Google Water like once. It seems as if wizards have a very limited range of alcoholic beverage options. Well, they really could have benefited from Shaker and Spoon, who can help you expand your liquor horizons. Shaker and Spoon is a service that sends you boxes of ingredients to make incredible cocktails. And this past weekend, I had a couple of my buddies over to make tequila-based drinks, and oh my goodness, they were unreal. One of them was a spicy tequila drink. One of them was like a better pickleback, which was really citrusy and amazing. And one was a mole savory old-fashioned. They took traditional style drinks that exist, but then using tequila and fancy ingredients made them so much more special, it really felt like wizard alchemy in the form of drinking cocktails. It was so fantastic. Each box comes with the ingredients to make 4 servings of 3 different drinks. They give you recipe cards so they can tell you exactly what to make and you can make them in the future. And all you need to do is provide the liquor. They give you everything else. And you can get $20 off your first box if you go to shakerandspoon.com/potterless. That's almost 50% off your box if you go to shakerandspoon.com/potterless and start having fancy drinks for fancy parties like I did today. And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless. So, reading his stories about Dumbledore's brother being crazy, to write off that Dumbledore went home to help him, and she postulates instead that it was to keep his sister imprisoned. Rita goes on about the relationship between Batilda and the Dumbledores, saying she's the only person on speaking terms with them. Apparently, Kendra died from a backfiring charm, according to Rita. And then Rita straight up admits to using Veritaserum for the book, which really seems like that should be illegal. Is Veritaserum not illegal to use, or is it just highly frowned upon?
I am pretty sure, oh God, it must be a controlled use.
Yeah, because I think Snape is not supposed to use it against Harry. He threatens to do it in school, but that might be more of just like a school rule and less so of a legal implication thing. But it seems really strange to be in your book. Hey, by the way, I basically tortured this old lady into talking.
No.
I get it's not as painful as torture, but it's still, at the end of the day, you are obtaining information that someone did not want to willingly tell you. That seems like it should be illegal. And for her to write it in the book, hey, I did this, is bonkers.
I mean, for having a lot of conferences that we've never heard of, like the wizarding, like international wizarding governance situation seems like awfully sketchy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a little Wild West.
Yeah.
It's a very weird
I mean,
place.
And whether or not it's illegal, the fact that the prophet and the ministry are so intertwined, I feel like Rita Skeeter's kind of untouchable in a weird way because she drives all the business.
Yes.
So I think that even if this is illegal, they might just be all pish posh and let it sweep under the rug.
Yeah.
Which is still crazy. But it just seems strange for her to admit this in the book. Just don't say it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hark, do I smell an archetype?
So she hypes up this big secret. And the big secret is that the same summer that Dumbledore went home, Batilda let in her great nephew, Gellert Grindelwald. So Rita says that Gellert's terror and rise to power are not widely known in the UK since nothing happened in the UK. And this seems very strange that a major act of history would just not be known because it happened in a different country. And countries in Europe aren't that far away. I don't know how long, like, this wasn't that long ago. Like, shouldn't news spread slash if they're making history textbooks, wouldn't they talk about it? It's not like in our history classes, no one talked about Hitler because, oh, Germany's so far away. It seems so strange that it's just like, oh, yeah, in the UK, people don't really know details about Grindelwald because he was all the way across the globe.
Yeah, it's actually a little weird, like, how disconnected the different wizarding communities are. Like, it really doesn't seem like there's a lot of, like, that much exchange between these, like, secret communities. But although, like, if people have been hiding magic for a very long time, it kind of makes it hard to, like, find communities that are, like, outside of your immediate reference range.
I guess, and I don't know if they ever talk about it, because we really only learn about the ministry, but is there no wizarding UN?
I mean, there's... What is it?
Because is the Wizard Gamut just the UK? I feel like there should be some sort of Wizarding United Nations where all of the different areas can talk about wizarding
so
stuff.
There's the International Confederation of Wizards, right?
Right. So I feel like they should be good about spreading news of big ol' problems like Wizard Hitler doing Wizard Hitler things.
This is one of those times when it would have been really nice if, like, someone with a mouth had, like, or if, like, Harry was, like, very slightly more interested in magical history. Because basically every time magical history is mentioned, it's like goblins, blah, blah, and then someone falls asleep. Like, they're just being
Professor Binns is so boring.
And it's like, no, there's stuff here. Yeah, come on, guys.
The one time history
is cool. What about
the
Goblin riots? This would be really useful. Yeah, I don't know, man. We just have, like, frankly, kind of sketchy information, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's not much that we can do with the information that we've been given, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, like, I have always kind of assumed that, like, throughout magical history, there are, like, things that happen in Muggle history that, like, are mirrored in magical history, or, like, that have a magical root that then get, like, reflected in Muggle history and spread out, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, kind of implied with, like, the Grindelwald and his weird rise of,
yeah,
like, basically just, like, two young wizard fascists,
yeah,
just hanging out.
I guess it just seemed strange to me that there wouldn't be a bigger dive into this.
Oh, absolutely. I'm, you know, I'm sure there was, and some editor was like, gotta go.
So we learned from Rita Skeeter and not a history textbook that at 16, Durmstrang expelled Grindelwald for his experiments. Rita says he struck up a close friendship with Dumbledore. Batilda introduced them to each other, and Rita has a copy of a letter that Dumbledore wrote to Grindelwald. It's about Dumbledore saying that he agrees with Grindelwald that wizards should be in control, which is a little weird, but he stresses that it should only be in the case of protection and, quote, for the greater good, which Grindelwald doesn't care about, apparently. Dumbledore also tells him that they should only use force when necessary, unlike Grindelwald did at Durmstrang. And Rita goes in on Dumbledore for this. She cites that his followers will bleat that he had a change of heart, which honestly seems very likely because, first off, he wrote this letter at 17, and I feel like I am definitely not the same person I was when I was 17 years old.
Yeah, and, slightly different opinions.
Yeah. And Dumbledore never did anything on these actions, so clearly he genuinely did have a change of heart, and we see so many things later on about Dumbledore caring about being nice to Muggles and caring for them and treating everyone equally, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, sure, it's not the best that he had this thought, but clearly he had some sort of falling out with someone who was very passionate about we should be conquering over the Muggles. I feel like there is a lot of evidence that Dumbledore had a change of heart, and it's stupid of Rita Skeeter to dismiss it off the bat.
But perfectly in character.
I mean, yeah, it's not surprising, but I don't know.
No, she's the worst. she's absolutely the worst. The things I would do to Rita Skeeter. I don't know why no one has smushed her yet.
Like, no
as
one in
a
the
beetle.
Oh, just smushed her
just
on the ground.
Been like, Biddy, you suck. Like, can we be done now?
Well, she is an unregistered animagist, so
I know.
I don't know how many people actually know. But yeah, it would have been nice if she just got smushed in normal life. Like, she was a beetle in the street and someone's like, oh, gross.
Curiously shaped spectacle markings. Goodbye.
So Rita writes that after 2 months, they split and never saw each other again until their legendary duel. Rita writes that Batilda thinks Ariana's death is what split them up, not a change of heart. And maybe it's both, but we'll have to see. Grindelwald came home to Batilda very upset, saying he wanted to go home right away. So she portkeyed him out. Rita then goes on to talk about the nose-breaking fight between Albus and Aberforth at Ariana's funeral. Rita basically is insinuating that Grindelwald killed Dumbledore's sister, which seems crazy, but also not crazy, because we just know that Grindelwald is super evil, so it's in play. Rita cites their showdown happened 5 years later and wonders what took Dumbledore so long to fight him. She thinks that it's Dumbledore's affection for him. And Rita then ends the chapter of this book asking if Ariana was the first to die for the greater good. And this is the first time that I thought of something, which, again, it might be a spoiler because I saw the first Fantastic Beasts movie, and this is kind of a bummer. And I guess don't tell me if this is correct, but I just wanted to voice this. I don't know if the books talk about this or if this is only in the Fantastic Beasts thing, but is she one of those obscurus things that, like, Clarence or whatever he was in the first book where he kind of explodes into black goopy mess of whatever because he's like pure evil? I don't know if she was this. It seems very strange, but that's the one thing I started to think, because her death has been so hush hush and not talked about that maybe she's that, but I don't know if that even comes into play in the books. I'm sorry to ask you a question that you can't answer me.
Yeah, but I mean, wow. Yeah, what a crazy theory you've got.
Yeah, I don't know.
You'll just have to find out what happens next.
I will have to see.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. No, yeah. There's a lot of reasons that people could not talk about why somebody died. Mm-hmm. That might be one of them.
Okay. Well, I will find out.
Yep.
But if that is it, I mean, I don't get any credit mm-hmm. for like coming up with this because I watched a movie about it. But if I'm wrong, whatever. So Hermione and Harry finish the chapter and Harry is absolutely crushed. He feels betrayed by Dumbledore. He feels like he's losing everything. His wand, Ron, Dumbledore. Hermione brings up that it's Skeeter, so they should take everything with a grain of salt. But Harry claps back, citing the letter. Which is true. Hermione is worried about the exact quote of for the greater good because it became Grindelwald's slogan slash justification for all the evil shit he did over the course of his entire Hitler run.
Yep.
And apparently it was even carved above the entrance to Nurmengard.
What's Nurmengard?
Thankfully, Harry and the reader both ask this question, and Hermione informs Harry that, oh yeah, it's the prison that Grindelwald built to hold his opponents. You know, this thing that's been around for all of the other books, for sure.
I think there's been a mention of Nurmengard in the previous books.
Okay. I at least don't remember
that
it.
That is worth a fact check, my friends. Yeah.
It's one of the things that when I'm recording these episodes, I want to like look up on Harry Potter Wiki. Mm-hmm. But Harry Potter Wiki does a very bad job of telling you everything that happens about
everything,
something in one sentence.
Yes.
Like if you look up a character, it finds a way to be like, oh, in this book. And thankfully it was always stuff that, like, I've never had a spoiler from Harry Potter Wiki, but I definitely looked up Sirius once for something. Mm-hmm. I think it was when I was trying to figure out the family tree of how he connected to all the other Blacks. And I swear the first sentence is like, Sirius Black, who died in the fifth book. It's like, why is this the first word, Harry Potter Wiki? Have you ever considered someone is maybe, oh, I don't know, reading the books for the first time?
I know.
Harry Potter Wiki needs like a spoiler-free version, like spoilerfree.harrypotterwiki.com. And then right off the bat, you can say, I'm on chapter this of this. And then
like
it doesn't
show
you.
Yeah, book one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh, I feel like that shouldn't be that hard.
To be fair, like a lot of the spoilers in Harry Potter are like contained within a detailed analysis of a family tree.
Mm, okay.
It's kind of intense.
Yeah.
Because everybody's related to everybody else.
It's super inbready and weird.
Yeah, it's a little strange. Super strange. Very, Tudors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, apparently Nurmengard is the prison that Grindelwald built to hold his opponents, but he ended up there after Dumbledore dueled him.
Dumbledore was like, this is a great place to put you.
Yeah, which is very woof and like the ultimate like, hubris, look at you. You built this prison for other people and now look
Dumbledore's
at where you are.
Great at stuff like that.
Real good.
Dumbledore's like, I see your grand plan and I flip it.
He's very big on poetic justice.
Yes.
So Hermione brings up that they only knew each other for one summer when they were very young. And Harry doesn't like this argument, though, because they were the same age as the squad is now, which is a good point, but also, look how much dumb shit you do,
right?
Harry Potter.
Harry, you're the stupidest person in the world, and you have so many feelings, and you're so bad at knowing what to do with them. Come on.
I think Harry in a couple of years will look back and be like, oh, I get it.
I did absolutely think that when I was 17, though.
Oh, what? That you never would have thought bad things like Dumbledore did.
No, that like I really have to get my shit together. Like I am not allowed to have like bad, like teenagers are known for doing stupid mm-hmm. things and I am the exception.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, mm-hmm. I'm definitely the exception. So, like, I'm going to try really hard to make sure that I never do stupid things.
Yeah.
I absolutely did really stupid things.
We all
like,
did.
Really stupid things. Like, everybody does. Okay, mm-hmm. cool.
No, I was in the same boat. I remember by the time senior year of high school rolled around is when I had this weird thing that happened to me where, like, freshman year, I was not fazed by popularity or anything at all. And then it, like, really mattered to me sophomore and junior year. And then senior year came around, by, like, the end of junior year, I was like, you know what? Screw this. Like, I like my group of friends and I don't care if we're like the cool kids or not.
Yeah.
And I was so retroactively embarrassed. Like, how could I have let popularity affect me? It's like, I was 15 and 16 years old. Like, that's what happens to people.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I didn't like become a jerk because of it, but I was like weirdly concerned with like, oh, I'm not getting invited to parties. Like, woe is me. And I felt bad as an 18-year-old. Like, how could I let myself succumb to this?
Holy shoot. robes.
Oh, I mean, but that's like everyone has, like, it's I fine know, to have
but it doesn't
dumb
make
thoughts.
It suck less. Like,
it's fine.
At the
I,
time.
No, I ended up in the best clique in high school ever. It was like,
cheers.
It was like the nerds who were passionate about stuff. It was like nerds that either played varsity sports or were into theater or music or something. Mm-hmm. It was like the best social
really
group to fall
group
into because yeah. It was just like nice people that had a thing that they liked about, and we all liked that we all had a thing we liked. I was very fortunate to be in the group that I was.
Yeah.
I feel bad for 2 years being sad about that.
Yeah.
But thankfully it came around, and like now our group of friends, like, we're doing the best out
that's
of everyone
really cool.
from high school.
Yeah.
So it worked
all
out.
All my high school friends are doing really cool things too. I'm
good.
So proud of them.
Yay.
They're so great.
And all the people Yay. That peaked in high school, they peaked in high school.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
No, I think all of our teachers were telling us that like we would be sad for the people who peak in high school, and some of them were sitting among us, and it was
that's
really
real.
Intense. It was so real, man.
I remember my senior year.
Yay for my high school teachers.
That's great. My senior year, one high school teacher said that. He said, if you ever hear someone say that high school or college even are the best years of your life, that's depressing. Because why would the best years of your life be before it's 25% over?
Yeah.
He brought this up. Like, can you imagine for yeah. three quarters of your life looking back and thinking, oh, my life hasn't been as good
right?
as it once was.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad that I think I'm on the come up.
Well, it's also really nice that like we're like one of the generations that didn't get hit with like a massive or like a really intensely drafted armed conflict.
Very true.
Like as soon as people graduated high school.
Yeah.
That would
we're lucky.
Yeah. Like if I were drafted into World War II when I was 18, I also would think that high school
yeah.
were the best years of my life.
Remember that time when I didn't have to murder people?
PTSD was recognized. Yeah. I don't know. Like, yeah.
I
anyway.
Do sure miss that time I didn't have to carry a gun and get shot at.
I sure do miss that time that I was not having constant nightmares. yeah. So anyway.
Harry Potter.
Speaking of constant nightmares, man.
Right?
This poor guy.
This poor tiny boy.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, apparently he's tall now.
Yeah. Oh, right. He is tall.
Yeah.
So Hermione thinks that Ariana being a squib is a lie and just doesn't make sense because it doesn't seem like how Dumbledore would treat it. Hermione starts to say that the Dumbledore we knew wouldn't, and then Harry interjects in all caps rage with, the Dumbledore we knew wouldn't try to conquer the Muggles by force, which, okay, Harry, take a step back. Hermione pleads that he changed, and Harry is having none of it. Hermione brings up the super true point that she thinks Harry is just mad because Dumbledore never told him any of this. And it's super real, and Harry can't even deny it. And he screams, maybe I am, which is 100% how he feels. Harry rants that he was asked to trust Dumbledore blindly without Dumbledore trusting him. And he cries, never the whole truth, never, which is kind of true. Hermione then tells him, he loved you, I know he loved you. And Harry then says, I don't know who he loved, but it wasn't me.
Wait,
which,
you're missing the part where Harry felt that they were as insignificant as insects beneath that wide sky.
Ooh.
I just had to
a poetic
that in
line.
There, just because of, just for angst's sake.
Yeah, very
okay,
angsty,
great, cool.
Very poetic. Harry then grabs the wand, thanks her for the tea, and says he'll finish the watch and that she should go back to bed. And that's the very happy, fun ending to chapter 18.
Can we just, like, I don't know. I had this, like, weird thought. You know how Dumbledore spends, like, all of the time that he's alive and having heart-to-hearts with Harry talking about how it's, like, Harry's, like, special capacity to love that mm-hmm. is, like, the thing that is important?
Yeah.
And Harry is, like, that is absolute bullshit. And Dumbledore is, like, no, but you're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm really, really reminded of this when Harry, like, freaks out with Dumbledore, like, not telling him the truth or something. And I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, Harry grew up in a really abusive household.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Harry grew up with, like, terrifying people raising him.
And a big thing was that they never told him he was a wizard.
Yeah, exactly.
So
like,
when he sees the person he cares about the most.
What a bizarre choice.
Yeah.
Like,
that Dumbledore wouldn't tell him everything.
Yeah, that, like, being kept together body and soul, but, like, with low-grade emotional abuse is, like, definitely better than, like, being held up and pampered
mm-hmm.
as Dumbledore says that he would have been if he'd been placed with a wizarding family, which we know is also like really more about the Fidelius Charm or like
sure.
conglomerate
mm-hmm.
random love magic
that
yeah. is on the Dursley's house. I'm like, oh, what is this boy who's having these, like, crazy, stupid reactions to, like, stuff that well-adjusted people don't do. And I'm like, oh, right. Mm-hmm. He, like, is only used to caring about other people and, like, not knowing what it's like to be secure and having that love return.
Sure. And anyway. No, no, no. It's good. And it's something that something that I brought up in a lot of episodes of Potterless, which people thankfully have been bringing up to me on social media. I always was upset that Harry didn't ask questions, but he was conditioned that asking questions was bad.
Don't ask questions.
Exactly. So it makes sense of why he won't ask questions. I think it is a bit of oversight on Dumbledore's part to not realize, first off, that Harry isn't going to ask any questions. So Dumbledore's got to tell himself. And that Harry hates that he was never told the full truth when he was a kid, so Dumbledore should tell him the full truth. Now, I'm sure Dumbledore has his reasons for not telling him everything, and even he apologized at the end of the fifth book for not being as upfront with him. And also, he wasn't, like, planning to die early, so it goes both ways.
I don't know. There's also the fact that, like, Dumbledore, it sounds like, was, like, super smart and had a really unhappy family life.
Yeah.
He's a suspicious motherfucker. Like, Dumbledore, maybe also Dumbledore has some trust issues over there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, everybody's issues are coming out to play.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is he mentions this as his justification in the fifth book. He doesn't want to overload Harry. Like, Harry has so much going on.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to tell him everything. And I think it's different where the place in which Harry is in now versus where he is when he was just a student is that if Harry was in this situation he's in now where it's like, hi, the only thing you have to do is murder Voldemort, I think Dumbledore probably would have shifted course and just laid everything out on the table if he was still alive.
Yeah.
Whereas when Harry's at school, Dumbledore is thinking, maybe I'll just let Harry try to be as normal as humanly possible. And I'll just tell him the stuff he absolutely needs so that he isn't just like crushed with the weight of everything.
Indeed.
So
yeah.
I see both sides to this. It's a super complicated, touchy subject thing. And I don't think either of them are perfect.
Yeah, I just think it's like, it's so much information for Harry and for the reader. I think how Rowling, rolling like bowling. Yes. pronunciation dance. Did it right. Yeah. So, I think that the way that Rowling handles, like, big, weighty emotions is, like, variable.
For sure.
I almost feel like these, I think it's worth moving on.
Okay.
That's what I think. Yeah, I really
We'll move
do.
On to chapter 19, The Silver Dale. Yeah. And we will do that next week. What's up, guys? It's Editing Mike. So when Cecilia and I recorded this episode, it went on very long, which is good because I think we had a lot of fun side discussions. But it means we have to break this into two episodes of Potterless. But before we wrap things up here, I did want to address something that came up in the news and people have reached out on social media about, and I feel like I should address just because it came up in the podcast a lot, and it's the whole Johnny Depp situation. If you hadn't seen, him and his lawyers released a bunch of documents saying that he didn't do anything to Amber Heard. A lot of what she said was untrue and that she actually abused him. There hasn't really been an investigation or any in-depth research and reporting done by a reputable news source. It's a lot of strange tabloidy sites that I've never heard of and Reddit sleuthing. And what I'm going to do now is what I should have done for the original situation. I spoke out when I didn't have a lot of the evidence, but the evidence that came forth was what I feel is enough and should be enough in this day and age where men get away with a lot of awful stuff and it's really hard for women to speak up, and I support women that do, and my natural inclination is to believe them when they speak up. Amber Heard had bruises on her face. She was warranted a court-sanctioned restraining order from Johnny Depp that a judge gave her and said that she deserved, and that, to me, was enough to think that Johnny Depp shouldn't be in this franchise of children's movies. I still stand by voicing my opinion that I don't want him in the movies. I feel that a woman speaking up is enough to have someone in a very public-facing position, one of which can inspire children. Being a movie actor inherently comes with being a role model as well. And I think that accusations, which have some validity to them, is enough to disqualify you from that. That's just how I feel. I only talked about Johnny Depp and not Amber Heard because at the time there was only evidence against him, and he's the only one in the Harry Potter movies. Now that there's apparently evidence against her, I believe that both people were abusive. I'm not sure who started it. I'm not sure who is more to blame. But ultimately, they're both garbage people. They're both bad. Abuse is never good, no matter what. And it seems like they both abused each other. And I don't like either of them as people. I wouldn't want either of them to be in the Fantastic Beasts movies. So I'm sorry for talking so much about something that I didn't have the full picture of, but I am not sorry for having the inclination to believe a woman when she speaks up and says that she was a victim of abuse. And at this point, I'm just gonna wait to see how things shake out before talking about it again. I don't want to talk about it. I'm sure you don't want to hear about it. I said it too much. I was just angry that J.K. Rowling seems to be the type of person to act like she's this champion for women, but then doesn't really back it up. And it just really angered me that she wasn't taking action when other people in similar positions to her and the film teams were, like with the Kevin Spacey thing where they reshot the entire movie that he was supposed to be in when his allegations came forward. So I'm just gonna hold off for now. I'm sorry for making it such a thing, and let's just all move past it. And let's just move on to talking about things that are better than abusive people, such as getting the Minerva McGonagall prequel story. And that's the end of this episode of Powerless. To make things a little bit happier, if you enjoyed Cecilia on this episode, you should definitely check her out. She is an amazing voice actress. She was on Wolf Through 59. I had the pleasure of working with her on Time Bombs, which was an audio drama that was put together in the span of a week by the Fear of Public Shame team. That includes past guests Zach Valenti, Sarah Shackett, and Gabrielle Urbina. It was such an incredible project to be a part of, and I can't recommend it enough. Just search Time Bombs into any of your podcasting apps, and you'll find it. So thanks again for listening. Thanks for understanding. And until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, before they ask McGonagall to tell them her entire life story, wizard on! If you want some new friends to talk about Potterless or Harry Potter as a whole with online, you should check out Potterless' social media. We've got Twitter, Instagram, Facebook groups, all great ways to find new people to talk about your favorite lightning bolt scarred friend and a grown man making fun of him. Potterless is created by Mick Schubert. It is hosted by Mick Schubert. It is edited by Mick Schubert. It is produced by Mick Schubert, as well as Leanne Davis, Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Erica and Calvin Bauer, Jesse Horgan, Natalie Klobuchar, Deborah Wilkins, Klaus Erlopu, Rebecca Adamick, Frank Chiodo, Marchismo, Tori Larsick, Samantha Rose Hwanson, Philly, Eugenia Dowsett, Kieran Webb, Abita Med, Caitlin Jordan Pontillo, Rosemary Dodge, Jill Boulay, Marie Lisa Seakeen, Ariel Bird, Romina Rivadanira, Camille Dock, Russell Dunk, Dustin Mullen Cooch, Audra, Eleanor Curlin, Sydney Cawthorn, Billy Hinton, Ross Ann Batamana, Andrea Franz, Nikita Power, Lala Palmer, Chelsea Green, Taylor Armstead, Cash Longer, Ali Madsen, Cassandra Aponte, Roxy Chaos, Amelia Krauss, Sean Montag, Sarah Nink, Ben Silver, Rachel Guthrie, Zachary Polito, Jessica Ann, Arna Guthna Daughter, Tiago Costa, Daisy Curtin's Daughter, Jessica Jacob, Orchid Grower, Steve Trelor, Vivian the Owl, Takari Arant, Haley Hastings, Marino Moster, Pinkie Pan, Angelina Withred, Ross Marie Heise, Phineas Ebner, Lee Ganji Singh, Alex Bisholte, Brian Williams, Caitlin Sullivan, Finn Stuckey, Mosin Siddiqui, Grace Riggle, Sammy Shaw, Raul Pineda, Ingen Oddsdotter, Mari Wynn, Brianne Wingate, Heidi Stoll, Alexandra Consulver, John Kotker, Jen and Juice, Noel Besalay, Tao, Hala O'Keefe, Emily Tyrell, Michael Russell, Robin Fernandez, Patricia Colon, Will Barrington, Liz Bigelow, Mariah Noah, Brandon Pickens, Sarah Enslin, Claire Spencer Teal, Sina Schutzeberg, Rory Collier, Gloria Gillum, Sarah and Patrick Donovan, AlleyCat29, Hallie Bowen, Veronica Bartova, Kevin Harnoy, Lotta B, Noah, Tracy Toya, Lucinda, Carlos Nino, Pam Webb, Nikki Amio, Colleen King, Jennifer Marklew, Friday J. Svedson, Ivor Peterson, Naomi Guglielmo, Tyler Latshaw, Summer Raffle, Heather Fleischman, Vera Cullotham, Carrie D. Bagason, Andrea Kroc, Elisa Grieven, Lynn Walker, Emily Gale, Ryan King, Cameron Watkins, Justin Montero, Christine Saunders, Jacob Parrish, Toothless Walnut, Weekend of Dead Cat Ladies, Maya Gray, Addie Rye, Mark Boddy, Polly Burridge, Kimberly Savage, Srijan Thanmay Gupta, Brittany Gutierrez, Sarah Shecker, Lauren Cook, Nova VM, Kyle, Zina Rosnowski, Emily Tilly, Colleen Mage, Harlan Haskins, Akanksha Saxena, Wouter Vandermaiden, Shelby Darnell, Noelia, and Can't I Potter? Web design by Kelly Beckman, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. You can find us on social media at facebook.com/potterless, twitter.com/potterlesspod, instagram.com/potterlesspodcast, or reddit.com/r/potterless. For any and all information on the show, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com, and bonus episodes live at patreon.com/potterless. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, a wizard on!